And welcome into Thursday's edition, four-man show today, March 31st, just days away from the start of the 2016 season. Yeah, who's excited?
Oh, I am.
So excited.
Extremely excited.
Can barely
Heath.
Yeah.
16 teams, really?
That's the best. It's going to be the best. Team inclusion. For the people.
Well, we've got a our podcast Not Rejects League draft tonight.
For the People League.
What is it?
For the People.
For the podcast For the People League?
Yeah.
Okay. Podcast League for the People. 16 teams now. We keep on adding teams, so.
We're done adding teams.
All right.
Let's go 24. Let's do it.
So actually it'll be good because tomorrow we'll be able to talk about really deep league targets, I guess, and should be helpful for people who are drafting in deeper formats this weekend. So that'll be good stuff. Today on the show, we will update you on position battles. Juan Nicasio is in the Pirates rotation. We got news for the Cleveland rotation, the Tigers rotation. Out of Baltimore, Tampa Bay, we'll try to update you on closers. Andrew Miller injury. Jose Reyes news, we'll talk about that. But it's bold prediction day as well. So that's exciting. And I want to read a lot of emails.
Okay.
Yeah, fantasybaseball at CBSI.com.
I have the boldest predictions of all of us.
Do you really?
Went bold.
I bet
you don't even
know
what my bold predictions are.
Well, if they're the ones you shared with me earlier,
Okay, so
you came up with brand new bold predictions. Yeah. Bigger, bolder, better.
We have a bold predictions article coming out.
Yeah.
And I didn't see the point in doing the same bold predictions in the article that I do on the podcast as I do on a video. We do all the same bold predictions everywhere.
All right, so, I now I wish I had made different bold predictions.
We have the stalest bold predictions in town.
Yes.
I did have some excess ones because we could only do three for the column. So maybe I'll share a couple of those.
Perfect. Perfect.
Yeah.
Well, then, let's get started. Question for you. Now, I've brought this up before as I've done more and more drafts. I still find really the same thing. I really feel that starting pitcher is shallower than usual because usually I feel like when we go through mock drafts or real drafts and we look at who's being taken in like rounds 20 or 19, 20, 21, whatever, I always feel like I used to say, look at the pitchers who are going there. Such great value. But I don't feel that way anymore. And I do think that you should fill out not only your starting rotation, but one or two bench spots. If you try to do that before like the top 70 come off the board, what are you guys thinking about starting pitcher? Do you feel the same way?
I think it's kind of deceptive. I think, you know, practically speaking, it may be exactly what you say, but I don't really think the chances of a late round pitcher hitting big or any less than they used to be. It's just that the disparity between them and the top level pitchers is greater than before. And there are more top level pitchers than before. So it's a bigger disadvantage to grab a pitcher late than it used to be. Even if maybe, like I said, the chances are the same of them hitting big.
Guys, Al, Heath.
Yeah, no, I think Scott's nailed it. That's exactly it. I don't think it's really changed other than that the top end is larger and better.
Interesting. All right. Well, that settles that. Well, here's a guy who's in the discussion now for a late round pick. He has been for a while, but you can feel better about it. Juan Nicasio, 15 scoreless innings, no earned runs at least. I'm not sure if he's given up any unearned. 24 strikeouts and 15 innings during spring training. Juan Nicasio is in the Pirates rotation. Where are you guys putting Nicasio in your rankings? Heath Cummings.
I might consider taking him at the very end of the draft. Is where I've got him in my rankings. We should not get too carried away with thinking that he's going to turn into like, I don't think he's not going to turn into like a must start every week or anything like that. But you could believe in the Searage effect. You can believe in the fact that, you know, maybe Nicasio is going to have his career revitalized by leaving the Rockies. Of course, it didn't happen last year, really, but.
They didn't have Searage then.
That's true.
He had top relief.
He pitched well last year, but in relief.
Yeah, I mean, a 3.86 ERA out of the bullpen doesn't scream instant fantasy starter the next season.
Yeah.
Correct.
But I would rather take Nicasio than Rich Hill.
Well, to Heath's point, who were the big pitchers we were talking about last year because of all the noise they were making in spring training? It was Zach McAllister in a very similar way to Juan Nicasio. And I was going to say Kendall Graveman. I mean, Taiwan Walker.
You did scream about him a lot.
Yeah. So, I mean, Zach McAllister and Kendall Graveman, neither of them amounted to anything. Now, neither of them was working with Searidge. So I do think Nicasio, there's greater reason to be encouraged about Nicasio than there was even for those two last year. But at the same time, you draft Nicasio expecting it not to work out. That should be your approach. And yeah. If it does, great.
Are you guys taking Nicasio or Hill first?
I'm taking Nicasio now.
Yeah. Okay.
I moved him over Hill. I've got him 32nd in my reliever rankings. I could see, now that he's got the job, bumping him up, you know, 4 or 5 spaces.
That's it. I forgot he's RP eligible.
Right. That's obviously where I think it matters more.
Yeah, that's big. All right. So Nicasio is going to be owned in leagues. I mean, if he's out there, you should get him, but don't give up anything too big. And, as Scott said, don't be disappointed if he fails. Kind of expect it. Meanwhile, in Cleveland, my Trevor Bauer draft pick in the podcast league isn't looking so good. He's in the bullpen. Cody Anderson and Josh Tomlin are in the Cleveland rotation. Do either of you, any of you, have any interest in either Cody Anderson or Josh Tomlin?
I bet the champion of the deep leagues does.
In very deep leagues. I used to be kind of big on Tomlin.
I thought you were a Cody deep Anderson guy since, for a while.
What's that?
You were a Cody Anderson guy for a while last year, weren't you?
Nah. I'm more of a Cody Anderson guy now than I've ever been.
Okay.
Which is not a lot.
I was kind of a Cody Anderson apologist for a short while last year because he got off to that crazy start with the low strikeout rate.
And I think he's going to be a little bit better with strikeouts this year. I think
velocity's
the overall
up, right? A couple miles per hour. I think I read that somewhere.
Okay. I did not see that. But he was, for pitchers that had 90 innings or more last year, and he just barely cleared that mark, Cody Anderson, he ranked 11th in highest soft contact rate. So there could have been a little something to the good stats, the low BABIP, which you could also chalk some of it up to the improved Cleveland infield defense, which came about around the same time that Anderson got put in the rotation. But he still did overperform, even with all those factors working in his favor.
The Indians see something they must really like about Anderson. I don't know if it the velocity is part of that. I think that's where I read it. But I think he had like a 5.50 ERA this spring, and Trevor Bauer had like a 2 ERA with a very good strikeout-to-walk ratio. So that would seem to indicate it never was a competition, even though we just found out about this competition like a few days ago. So I don't know. You haven't heard the last from Trevor Bauer. I think that's pretty safe to say.
What about Shane Green? Anybody want Shane Green? He is Detroit's 5th starting pitcher.
I do. I feel like I'm a little late to the party. I definitely would have some interest in him going forward.
Nicasio or Green?
I'll say Nicasio still. I think Green's probably safer.
I was going to say, I think there's a better chance that Shane Green is average.
Yeah. They can give you something you can use, where Nicasio, it's completely a risk-reward thing.
Go ahead.
Well, Green, to throw the stat out there that is generating this new excitement. Yesterday, Green pitched 5 2/3 shutout innings and struck out 9.
Yeah.
And has been pitching like that all spring. And obviously, he had the great strikeout rate in his first mini season with the Yankees 2 years ago, before all this injury stuff popped up. So just a little backstory.
If you watch Shane Green, I mean, there's something to like about him. I thought he needed to develop more pitches because he was a sinker baller, was getting a lot of ground balls, but I feel like teams kind of caught up to him, and I sort of expected him to get off to a good start last year and then get beat up, which happened, but in much more spectacular fashion than I ever imagined. But I feel like Green, you know, if he improves his arsenal, I think last year he improved his slider. Like, there's stuff to like about him. So I feel like he's probably available in our leagues, and nobody's picked him up in our deep roto leagues. You know,
I would say he's out there.
Yeah. So let me read some names. Would you rather have Jimmy Nelson or Shane Green?
Jimmy Nelson.
Shane Green.
Nelson.
Would you rather have Rich
Hill?
He's
pretty fringy, by the way, so I think Green is too.
Rich Hill or Shane Green?
I'll go Shane Green.
I will go Rich Hill.
Yeah, I'm going to stick with Hill for now, but not with much confidence.
Okay, last one. Jared Eichhoff or Shane Green?
Eichhoff.
Very definitive for Scott.
I'm really high on Eichhoff. He's the new Rich Hill for me.
I'll say much more tentatively Eichhoff.
Okay, everybody's coughing. Joey Rickard will be on Baltimore's opening day roster, could be their starting left fielder. So is Joey Rickard even a top 60 out? Is he a top 70 outfielder? Is he a bench hitter in a five outfielder league?
In Roto, steals potential. Yeah, I think he meets that threshold. Probably not much higher than that.
Okay.
I don't think I'll have him in my top 70.
Okay.
I don't know. That's some names that were still, and maybe Rickard could turn out to be better than I'm thinking, but I don't think so.
Well, do you have Rajay Davis in your top 70?
I don't believe
in Roto, because that's kind of where I'm thinking, I'm valuing. How do you say the name?
Rickard.
Rickard. Okay, not Ricard, but Rickard.
From what I've heard, it's Rickard.
Yeah. Okay.
All right.
I'm trying to pull up my rankings. I've got slow internet here, but I think I've got him around 80th.
All right, Joey Rickard. He'll be drafted tonight, I have a feeling, in our 16-team categories league.
I should have been bolder. I have him exactly 80th.
They're beautiful. Bold prediction.
See, I don't think he will be drafted in our 16-team categories league. That's only three outfielders.
It's true.
Okay, so three outfielders, 16, that's 48. Yeah, then utility. Okay, you're right. You're right. Maybe he will be, though. If you need steals, it is a categories league. Right, we'll see. We'll see.
It's possible. If you draft him, then we can be sure that he will be.
You know, I'm going to put him on a Word document of, like, people that I often forget about. I usually do that. I make a document of, like, I go through former mock drafts, like drafts that we did a few weeks ago, whatever, and I look at picks that at the time I was like, ooh, that was a really good pick. And I write that name down or type it out, and I have that document open. I usually don't look at it until like round 15 or so, but guys that I want to keep in mind that I often overlook. So
it's very
that.
Studious.
Thank you.
I like that.
Studious.
James Loney will not be on Tampa Bay's opening day roster. I don't know if this has any effect, but I thought maybe on Corey Dickerson, just because this could mean that Steve Pierce and Logan Morrison are playing first base and platooning, and maybe that makes Dickerson less likely to platoon.
Yeah.
Or am I reaching?
No, I think that's fair.
I don't think, and I could be wrong, but I don't think there's a very good chance that Corey Dickerson is in a strict platoon while Logan Morrison is playing every day.
Yeah,
that
exactly.
Just, the idea of that seems, and it's possible, but...
But I think they both could be platooned.
Well, who's the other...
Right-handed hitter?
Other than Pierce.
Do they Guyer?
Yeah, I got to see. I mean, I know they've got a lot of depth to the...
Is
well,
it Guyer,
Guyer? Guyer, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're right. Guyer. Guyer's a lefty masher, so I could see that.
Well,
I mean, unless it's Kiermaier who platoons.
Oh, not the best center fielder of all time.
Well, is Dickerson their best hitter?
Yes.
Yeah.
I'm not going to worry about it too much with Dickerson. I feel like he's better than...
There's plenty of things to worry about with Dickerson.
Okay. I would not be surprised if Corey Dickerson leads Tampa Bay left-handed hitters in at-bats against left-handed pitchers.
Bold prediction! Sure. Very good. Now, do we have any updates on the closer battles in Atlanta or Houston or any other unsettled closer battles?
Well, look, three major events happened to the closing landscape last year that we have yet to talk about.
Last year?
Yesterday that we have yet to talk about.
Feels like last year.
It was more recent than last year, yes. The first and biggest, well, we did say this one on the podcast, Ozuna beat out Drew Storm for the closer role.
Yeah.
Andrew Miller took a liner off the wrist, has a chip fracture.
In his right wrist, his non-throwing wrist.
Yeah. Still seems like that's going to put him on the DL to start the year. So now Dellin Betances is the guy benefiting from Aroldis Chapman's the suspension to start the year. And I think that makes Betances must own, just like it did Miller, because, you know, Betances is just as good. And then the third one, Jason Mott, sounds like he's going to go on the DL to start the year with a shoulder strain. So Jake McGee is, you know, apparently it's still not official. There's Chad Qualls in that mix or whatever, but I, you know, it's going to be Jake McGee closing for the Rockies.
You know,
the
I
Rockies
had
do
that
not
stuff.
Like Jake McGee, I don't think.
I had that stuff in my notes, Scott White.
Okay. Well, so, you talked about closers and.
Nah, that's good. That's good to know.
Smooth segues.
I didn't really think Miller. Like, I saw Dellin Betances go in this 14-team head-to-head points league that Heath actually just picked. I was actually going to make Heath pick on the air, but he made the draft pick silently.
I did. I'm really kind of flustered right now in that league, and I can tell you why if you want me to, but I'm not in a good place.
Okay, in 1 second. I saw Betances go, and I just want to say that before the news last night, I had no idea. I was out all day and night, very busy day, and I had no idea what was going on in the world. And I saw Betances go, and I was like, that is a terrible pick, because people seem to like to take Dellin Betances in head-to-head points leagues, and he has very, very little value there because he doesn't get any saves and very rarely gets wins. But then I saw Andrew Miller had a chip fracture in his right wrist, although what I was reading, it didn't seem like even close to a certainty that he was going to go on the DL.
Well, maybe I'm misreading it. It sounds pretty serious, and he immediately walked off. He felt bad enough that he just charged straight to the dugout and threw his glove on the ground.
I think it hurt. We can determine from that it definitely hurt really bad.
It hurt, and he was encouraged afterwards. It's still obviously worth picking up Betances just in case you're getting a month of him closing. Not going to argue with that. All right, Heath, I was going to make you pick on the air, and then we're going to get to bold predictions after we run through the rest of the news. We got to talk about Jose Reyes, which we'll do in a second. You picked Justin Turner in this league. It's a 14-team head-to-head points league. I love my team. I am interested to hear why you're so frustrated.
I love my team as well. I just did the right thing, and it cost me. And that's frustrating. What happened was Nick Kostos, our good friend Nick, was on the clock, and he only had 7 minutes left until his slow draft clock ran out. Oh. I am completely convinced he had no idea that he only had 7 minutes left. He was picking two spots in front of me. The one real weakness on my team, I feel like, is Hector Rondon is my number one closer, and I'm getting very close to not getting a decent number two closer, and you know how I feel about having decent relievers. Mm-hmm. And so I let him know that he only had 7 minutes left until his clock expired, and he took Santiago Casilla, who was, in my opinion, the by far and away best reliever available. And there's no chance he would have been auto-drafted Casilla. So I took Justin Turner.
Yeah, I mean, look, we can talk about this now. Drafting in deep leagues, it does change things. This isn't the deepest of leagues. It's only 14 teams, and it's, you know, three outfielders, two relievers, with Sparps included. Starting pitchers who were eligible as relief pitchers, but getting ready for 16 teams tonight. Right. I mean, a couple things that changed for me. I can't wait as long as I want on catcher. You know, I'm very often in a 12-team league, one of the last people to draft a catcher. I don't feel like there are 16 good ones, so I won't be waiting as long there. And probably the same thing with shortstop. Like in this league, in this 14-team league, I just recently took Yasmani Grandal and Ketel Marte because I didn't want to be totally weak there. Because the waiver wire can be pretty barren at those positions if you don't, in deeper leagues, if you don't invest a little bit earlier on it. Anything change for you guys in deep leagues?
I think I agree more with what you said about catcher than I do shortstop. Just because I do think there's going to be a few shortstops left out there. I mean, there's still several everyday shortstops that will contribute something.
Well, I'll tell you what, Heath. I think in Roto, when you look at Gene Segura and Alcides Escobar, for example,
right,
those guys, you know you're going to get steals from them. Mm-hmm. So I'm fine with them in Roto. But in points leagues, I don't know. Look, they have good seasons. They'll have good seasons. But I don't know how I feel about them being my starting shortstop in points leagues. I feel like the only thing you can rely on with them is steals and probably runs.
Yeah, but I like Ketel Marte a lot. I've taken him in a lot of drafts, but I don't know what you're really relying on Ketel Marte for besides steals and hopefully runs.
Yeah.
Well, in a points league, he's not going to strike out much.
Which Escobar doesn't.
And well, Marte is a pretty good walks guy. I mean, he's, you know, not Carlos Santana, but right. Those other guys are bad walks guys. So
that's true.
Yeah, I think the overall package is a little better. But
I like it better, for sure. I wasn't trying to put them on the same level.
I don't really disagree with your overall point about shortstops, because I feel like, yeah, there's a lot of, like, in a standard mixed league, I wouldn't feel comfortable with Marcus Semien as my starting shortstop. But in a deeper one, I mean, this is a guy with 15 homers and 11 steals last year who, you know, was having to concentrate so much on defense in between games that kind of just let the offense go for the middle portion of the season. Then
also horrible. I mean, let's be real. He was horrible.
Well,
I understand.
Look at what he did the last 2 months. He had like an 820 OPS.
Yeah, I know. And he's definitely a guy that I had as a backup plan if I didn't draft Marte.
For a middle infielder, I don't see a 257 batting average, 15 home runs, and 11 steals as horrible.
But he,
and I think there's plenty of room to improve on that.
Yeah, I share your optimism. I just feel like if he doesn't pan out, it's not a position where you can go to the waiver wire and look, you might be able to, Eugenio Suarez could be really good, or Al, who is one of the shortstops you mentioned in your targeting deep leagues?
Yeah, I mentioned Zach Cozart.
Zach Cozart,
I would include him along with Suarez and Simeon as good fallback guys.
It could work out. You're not necessarily going to feel great about it if you wait and wait at these positions in deep leagues. That's I guess the point I was trying to make. Al, what do you think? You love the deep leagues, so what? Anything change for you?
Well, yeah, I guess not particularly. I mean, I'm just trying to think because, I mean, I'm sure something does change, but there's nothing really, you know, dramatically
I think
different.
The closer thing's the most dramatic thing, right? Would you agree with that?
Yep.
There's only 30 players who can have that job at any one time.
Yeah, I mean, it creates a little more urgency there. I suppose that's probably the biggest impact.
I think that will make it really interesting in our draft tonight because there are no RP spots. But saves is one of the five categories.
Yeah, it's just seven pitcher slots.
Seven pitcher slots.
Yeah.
So, what if you take in a league like that, a head-to-head categories league, 16 teams, no specified RP spots, but saves is a category. What if you take two good closers? Like, I'm not saying you have to take Wade Davis and Craig Kimbrell, but what if you take Wade Davis and, I mean, David Robertson keeps going, well, all right, AJ Ramos. Wade Davis and AJ Ramos, like, you're probably going to win saves most weeks.
Well, I wouldn't go that far. You have a chance of winning saves any given week.
Yeah,
you take two closers.
I think if you are able to lock down one good closer and then you take two towards the bottom end and have three closers, you're going to win saves every week.
If you start three closers in a league where there's not even enough for every team to have two,
you're guaranteeing that category.
Unless someone else
right
also takes three and you happen to face
you might
that
lose
someone
that category
else.
One
but
week.
Yeah, yeah. I would take the team with three closers to beat the team with two closers in saves just about every time.
What about punting starting pitchers in this type of format?
It's something I have thought about.
I think it would work pretty well.
I mean, you're going to lose wins and strikeouts.
Yeah, but I think in this deeper format, you probably have an even better chance of winning saves, whip, and ERA. I don't know. I'm thinking out loud here because I haven't considered it. But we get so many emails and tweets from people that say, grade my team. And a lot of people are doing this strategy, this punt starting pitchers and win, whip, ERA, and save. So I do think we should talk a little bit about it. And it is becoming a pretty prevalent strategy, whether it's been for a while and I just haven't known about it or it's just gaining more steam. A lot of people are doing it. And in this deeper format, I think it could really work a lot better.
There is a distinction that needs to be made even between different types of head-to-head categories league, because in some head-to-head categories league, if you win more categories than your opponent that week, you just get a 1-0 record. In other categories leagues, you get a win for every category you beat your opponent and a loss for every category where your opponent beats you. So if you're punting wins and strikeouts, or quality starts and strikeouts in this specifically, you're saying you can only go 3-2 in the pitching categories every week. That's not good enough for me.
Well, I think a part of this strategy that gets overlooked is by punting starting pitchers, you're supposed to be not guaranteed, but you're supposed to have an advantage over everyone else in the hitting categories.
You're going to have to pay for closers, though, in this league.
Yeah, I mean, you won't have to use one of your first five picks on a closer, for sure.
But isn't this working also contingent about the fact that not too many other people are doing it?
Right. Oh, yeah. If two people even do it in the same league, it's going to be really weird.
Yeah.
But I haven't ruled out doing it tonight.
Okay.
Yeah, me either. I just considered it 2 seconds ago, but now I haven't ruled it out yet.
You guys don't have to worry about me doing it.
We know.
Yeah, and me neither.
And I did make the mistake of saying that you would be losing strikeouts and wins. Wins are not a category tonight. So.
Oh, but quality starts are.
You would definitely be losing quality
starts.
Well,
actually, that's a big distinction because you actually have a chance to win wins every now and then if you use that strategy. You don't have a chance to win
deep
quality
leagues,
starts.
Where... You know, it's a non-holds league and closers are scarce. I mean, I've looked for vulture wins.
Mm-hmm.
You know, guys who are going to give me innings and are in position to vulture wins. So that's definitely out the window here.
Okay. Charges against Jose Reyes will be dropped. his wife won't cooperate, that does not mean he won't be suspended. He will be suspended.
But it does shorten the timetable, presumably. We don't know what the suspension is. I'm guessing it'll be about the 30-year-old Chapman got, right?
Yeah.
I think it makes Jose Reyes much more worth stashing, I think, in a mixed league, assuming he's just going to be out a month. And B, it makes Story's sleeper appeal significantly less, because I'm not sure a month is enough time for him to secure that job, to convince the Rockies they don't want to go back to Reyes.
It clearly decreases Story's value, but I just think that it's way too early to be making any assumptions. It could be a month. It could obviously be less. I think it could wind up being a lot more. It all depends on what evidence MLB has. And, you know, they could determine that this is a much more serious situation than the Chapman situation. So, if I'm holding Reyes or Story, I think I'm just holding tight there and waiting to see what happens.
Now, I have a league where I drafted my bid on Reyes for $5 or $6. And I think I'm starting Alcides Escobar at shortstop. So I don't love it. But if you have a better shortstop, Escobar and Roto is not that bad. I don't want to keep dumping on him. But if you feel good about shortstop and you have Jose Reyes, what do you think about offering him to the Trevor Story owner? Because quite frankly, I'm pessimistic about Reyes missing this much time, not having spring training, and then just being thrown into the fray. Like, I don't know what his performance is going to be like. And he seems to be like a player on the decline anyway. The only thing saving him is Colorado. So what do you think about seeing if you can get some value for Reyes now and offering him to the Trevor Story owner, who would probably value Reyes more than any other owner would?
I love that idea. I feel the same way about Reyes. I wrote a piece late last season about how he really was no longer an elite shortstop and was not that easy to distinguish from the rank and file. And so this just... his situation now, even though from a fantasy perspective, I guess you could say it improved, I'm still very down on him. So yeah, if I've got him, I know I just said if I have him, I'm holding. But in that particular situation where there's somebody who could be very motivated to potentially overpay, I think that's the one situation worth looking into.
That said, I do want to give his Coors Field numbers. He batted .323 with a .351 on base and a .462 slugging in 93 at bats.
That's pretty good.
Yeah. And again, I always
just wonder
this, though,
how much, you know, opportunity he's going to have. I'm not assuming anything about how long he's going to be out and when he comes back, what the Rockies are going to do with him.
How much money do they still owe him?
Oh, a lot.
Cause I think that matters.
Yeah.
More than $15 million over the next 2 years. I think, that's safe to say.
More than $15 million per season.
Each year.
Yeah. It's a lot. I thought he had 3 years left, but, can look it
no,
up.
No, it's 16 and 17 with an option in 18, and it's about 50% more than $15 million per year. It's $22 million
okay.
per year.
Okay.
All right, guys.
So I think you'll get a chance.
Let's get a move on here. We'll get to bold predictions. Eduardo Rodriguez likely out until May. Howie Kendrick has not returned yet. We have an email about Chase Utley coming up. He might be leading off for the Los Angeles Dodgers. Ian Kennedy expects to make his first start despite a hamstring injury. That should be Tuesday. Baltimore released Miguel Gonzalez, according to the Baltimore Sun. And then there were two stories that I read yesterday. One was an old one by Mike Petriello on MLB.com in January about Justin Verlander and his spin rate on his fastball. Did you guys happen to catch that one? I know it's been a few months, but Justin Verlander has an elite spin rate on his fastball. I think the best, maybe the best in baseball, or the most RPMs or whatever. And
I did not see that.
It was very interesting. And not only that,
it had been part of what maybe in digging through some numbers, I have to go back and look and see if that was something I came across. In any event, that's a very good thing.
And not only that, but he also was throwing his high fastball more when he was successful last year. So it was a pretty cool article, and I saw it linked off of our website on CBSSports.com.
So the spin rate improved when the other numbers improved.
I actually think the spin rate was pretty consistent, if I remember correctly. Yeah.
But that, would be less encouraging.
Yeah. Right.
No. But it was the location in combination with the spin rate, because he was throwing it up in the zone, and it was very, very successful for him.
Okay. I'm curious, since you guys are all higher on Justin Verlander than I am, what do you project his strikeout rate to be? Just take a wild
I'm going to be a little conservative on this and say probably 8.5 per 9.
Okay.
That's sort of what I was thinking.
But definitely with the possibility of it being over 9.
Okay.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's conservative. That's higher than each of the last 2 years.
Oh, yeah, but you, the last 2 years were bad.
We know. We're just going to go around in circles because we're just going to say, yeah, but he was hurt. And you're just going to say, yeah, but I don't care.
No, I think there's an argument to be made for 8.5.
Well, I'll qualify that then and say I think that's a conservative estimate.
Okay.
I mean, instead of saying 8.5, you know, I hope he gets 8.5. Like, I actually think that's one of the worst case scenarios for him.
All right, then. The last
we really need to be doing this as a video podcast because he just made some great faces.
I literally bit my lip. You're welcome.
He's bleeding.
last thing. Just a story I read about Robinson Cano from Joel Sherman, and he's saying how a scout said Cano physically looks much better than he has recently, and he's having a great spring, and it will lead me to my only bold prediction. My only bold prediction, I will let you guys handle it, but I like Robinson Cano. Bold prediction, Robinson Cano, number one first base, second baseman in fantasy this year.
Bold.
That's bold.
Yeah, he's had some monster shots this spring. I'll be honest. I'm kind of second guessing that bust call a little. I'm not going to take it back, but I'm a little worried about it.
Oh, wow. Headline on MLB.com. Red Sox go with Shaw over Panda at third base.
That's correct.
He is the starting third baseman, Travis Shaw. How much do you want Travis Shaw now?
It's a bench option in a standard roto lineup league, I think, with the corner infield spot. He's worth monitoring anywhere, I think, but that's the only league where I think about picking him up.
I'll go out on a limb. Bold prediction number two, Travis Shaw will be drafted in tonight's non-rejects league draft.
I think you're probably right.
He will get drafted.
I don't know.
He's first base and third base eligible. That helps.
You can't argue this with him because Adam will just draft him.
I have control. All right, Al, you could go first with your bold predictions. Hit me with it.
All right, and I'll start with the boldest of my bold predictions. This is dedicated to Heath.
Yes.
Ian Desmond will have more fantasy value in either of the major formats than Francisco Lindor on a per plate appearance basis. And I'm qualifying it, making it less bold, because I'm not bold enough to say that Francisco Lindor's plate appearances as a leadoff hitter aren't going to help him, aren't going to matter. But on a per plate appearance basis, Ian Desmond will produce more.
I like the bold prediction because it's like a bold prediction about two players.
Yeah.
That's why it's dedicated to Heath. Two players that he feels totally opposite about.
It's completely wrong.
That's bold. And I actually think it's right.
Al, I'll follow up. Do you like Ian Desmond? We haven't really talked much about him since he got signed by the Rangers.
I like him okay. I like him, I'd say, you know, roughly about as much as I like Lindor, which means that I'm kind of...
lukewarm.
Yeah. Thank you.
Okay.
I'd say just cold.
Al, bold prediction number two?
Bold prediction number two. This one is bolder and probably a little stupider now that he's hurt. So I wrote this one hours before the revelation came up about his oblique injury. But Anthony Desclafani, I'll still predict, will get 200 strikeouts this year.
Wow.
As a combination of the good strikeout rate that he had for the bulk of last season, plus his stature as the number one starter for the Reds before he got hurt. I think he'll retain that again by probably the second week of April. So he'll get the most starts, the most innings. He's got good control. He'll go deep into games. He'll rack up enough innings and have a high enough K9 rate to get just above 200 strikeouts.
Now, I just want to point out, if I may, that last year, the number of pitchers with 200 strikeouts or more was 18.
Okay.
18. Zach Greinke was number 18. So
that's why it's a bold prediction, dude.
Yeah, okay. No, I'm just, okay. Desclafani, a top 20 pitcher in strikeouts.
There you go.
All right.
Al, number three.
Number three. Least bold, but a big departure from last two seasons. Gene Segura will get more than 40 stolen bases this year.
Ooh.
He's playing for a manager who loves to have his players run. He'll be hitting at the top of the order, assuming he'll get on base some of the time. He'll get his 40.
That's going to make him like at least a top 8 shortstop. That's going to make him a total steal. Pun intended.
Yeah. Yes.
I like it.
There it is.
All right.
There it is.
Heath, three bold predictions.
Okay. I've got so many bold predictions that I'm just throwing random ones out there and seeing, seeing which ones you like.
Seeing which sticks.
Yes. I will start with Chris Carter leading the National League Central in home runs. Chris Carter will lead the NL Central in home runs.
Oh, you're afraid to have him compete with Giancarlo.
Well, he's not gonna have more home runs than Giancarlo. He might hit 60 this year.
I'll take Rizzo. Or I'll take Chris Bryant.
See him get to 40 first.
But okay, that's good. Bold prediction.
Okay. Vincent Velasquez will finish as a top 10 closer in points leagues.
Reliever. Yeah. Relief pitcher eligible pitcher.
He will also be in the top 10 closers.
It's not a closer. It makes no sense.
That's how
okay. I don't even think that's that bold.
So you're saying he's going to take over as the Phillies closer?
No, I wouldn't want the Phillies closer.
That would be really, That'd be bold.
And then, I guess the last one just for a little bit of fun, because this wasn't that far from happening last year. Kendrys Morales will score more fantasy points than David Ortiz.
Good. Yeah, I'm glad you had that one in there. I like it. Well, I'll tell you what, if he does score more than Ortiz, you're going to be in good shape because you have Kendrys Morales on every squad.
You know, and I don't ever take him early.
No, you don't.
He just, nobody else wants to take him.
All right,
not nearly as good as Ortiz.
Well, he's going 10 rounds later.
Yeah. I mean, if Ortiz falls off a cliff, it can certainly happen. He's 40, so.
Or if Morales is 10% better or Ortiz is 10% worse.
Do you really think there's upside for Morales beyond last year?
No,
that
I think
was such a departure from the previous 2 years, 3 years, however many years.
No, not really at all.
Well, and he hit like 350 something with men in scoring position.
In 2013, he hit 270 with 23 home runs and 80 RBI. Last year, he hit 290 with 22 home runs and 106 RBI. So it was really the RBI's in a better offense.
He's so much older now.
What?
He's so much older
than he was last year?
Yes, wait. Just like David Ortiz.
Yes.
He's a whole year older.
He is, for sure.
I'll recap our six bold predictions so far. Al has Ian Desmond more valuable than Francisco Lindor on a per plate appearance basis in both formats. Anthony DeSclafani, 200 strikeouts. And finally, one that I can pronounce properly, Gene Segura will get more than 40 steals. Heath says Chris Carter leads the NL Central in home runs. Vince Velasquez, top 10 reliever. Kendrys Morales, more fantasy points than David Ortiz. Scott White, hit me with it.
All right, three bold predictions for you. All right.
He's thinking of ones he hasn't used, right?
He's trying to.
No, I'll use a couple. This is kind of a qualifier like Heath had for Chris Carter, but Danny Valencia will be the best third baseman in the AL West. Which Ooh. Means better than Kyle Seager and better than Adrian Beltre. Danny Valencia.
Mm. I think that's crazy. I think that's the craziest thing we've heard yet.
200 strikeouts for Desclafani. Okay. it's at least in the same ballpark. I mean, if you just project Valencia's stats last year over 550 at-bats or whatever, mm-hmm. It's happening. I mean, all he has to do is keep doing what he's done.
I can buy it. Scott, I can buy into Danny Valencia. He's having the best spring he's ever had. He made the adjustment. He learned from Jose Bautista. I can buy in a little bit more. You know, there's more of an argument to be made. I support you on that, Scott White. Number two.
All right, number two. Drew Smyly. He's gonna hate this one.
300 Bruce... innings pitched.
I will, you know, I was the only one hating on the other two's predictions. They both kept quiet about each other, so it's fair game. Drew Smyly makes more starts than Johnny Cueto this year and is better in them.
I mean, I don't hate it. I know that you have this, is soothsayer the right word? Ability?
No.
Okay.
Oh, okay. I know where you're going.
Yes.
Okay.
The soothsayer ability to be able to foresee Johnny Cueto's injury.
I'm the elbow whisperer.
That not for other players.
I don't even have to be in vicinity of the elbow. I just whisper to it.
Just specifically for this one player, though. It's not like you're the elbow whisperer for the league.
No.
Just for Johnny Cueto.
I know Johnny Cueto's just elbow, right elbow better than he is.
Not only that, he's also predicted Tommy John surgery for Michael Pineda.
Yeah, I'm all about predicting surgeries for players, career-altering surgeries.
And then you're also the one person that seems to believe that there's no reason to limit Drew Smyly's workload.
Drew Smyly threw 5 no-hit innings yesterday and struck out 7. He has been pitching out of his mind this spring. After he returned from the torn rotator cuff last year, I think he had 3 double-digit strikeout starts. He's really good.
He's going to look a lot like Taijuan Walker did last year.
Nah, he'll be better than that. I don't think he's going to be as good as Cueto. I don't think it's bad as a bold prediction because Cueto's got a lot of risk this year, but I didn't put that out as a bold prediction, so I guess I'm not buying it myself.
You know, you hate on Taijuan Walker's 2015 and all the time. He was good.
No, he
was terrible for a month and a half, and it inflated his ERA to 4.50. But from that point forward, he was pretty much must-own.
No, so, he had a 10 start. Stop. Good 10 start stretch,
no,
and then he was.
No, it was a good 20 start stretch.
It was a good.
Only if you look at WHIP.
I will say that in 4 of the months last year, he had an ERA over 4.8.
Yeah, he wasn't good.
If you break it down by month, but if you just take mid May on, it was very good numbers
because of 2 months.
He was good at the end of September. No, Heath, I forget exactly how it breaks down, but you're
no,
cherry.
No, wait, listen,
you're
Heath,
cherry picking.
Well, what
were
we're
his? Wait, Heath,
yeah,
what were his
I'm,
August?
I'm cherry picking the greatest chunk, the biggest cherry.
I know you guys can't really hear me today. We're having a issue with that, but Heath, what were Taijuan Walker's August and September ERAs?
August, he was 3.73, which is
not that good.
It was after that 10 start stretch.
I know, and that's not that good. 3.73 this day and age.
Talking about nearly a strikeout per inning and a very low WHIP. I'll take a 3.73.
3.73 was his second best ERA for any month.
And what was the best?
The best was June.
Right, the where he just went crazy.
Yes, June, which was 2.36. He also had a 4.86, a 4.95, a 5.74, and a 6.86.
But, you know, half of May was corrupted by that terrible start I talk about. If you just look at half of May on...
half of May and June.
There's no reason
right, 10
to divide
starts.
A player's numbers up by month.
Well, maybe not by month, but if you look at what he did skill-wise for different segments of the seasons, was not good early. Was amazing in the middle, and was just okay in the end. There were 3 distinct...
You're not dropping a guy who's just okay after he spent a bunch of time being great.
Well, that's because you're recognizing his upside, but when we look back at what he actually did, maybe you should have dropped him. That's all
how
I'm saying.
How do you feel about a 4.1 ERA with 7.6 strikeouts per 9?
Horrible.
Yeah, I mean, that's not a mixed league pitcher.
That was not by month. That was his second half.
Okay. All right, let's move on. Scott, your final bull prediction, and then you guys have to give me at least 10 emails in 10 minutes, okay? Because I keep promising mailbag. So, Scott, okay. Bull prediction.
All right, last year, on March 31st, I turned 31, and on that day, I predicted 31 home runs for Chris Bryant. So, March 31st this year, I turned 32. I'm predicting 32 home runs for Chris Bryant this year. Exactly. And I'm just going to, this is going to be an annual tradition. I'm just going to predict whatever age I turn that year. That's what I'm going to predict for Chris Bryant on March 31st, which I may have to give up by the time I get to my mid 40s if I'm still doing that.
I'm predicting Chris Bryant will hit 73 home runs.
Chris Bryant won't be playing then.
By the way, couple things. One, I'll take the over on 32 home runs. Two, did you just sneakily let us know that it's your birthday?
I did.
Happy birthday! What the hell? I had no idea. I'm sorry.
I have never seen somebody, Adam, so happy to have people tell him happy birthday.
It's just a once a year, small little bit of joy in life.
Happy birthday.
I don't think, I spent part of my life, trying to hide it from people. And it was just sad.
Okay.
You know, I want people to know it was my birthday.
I understand.
I want them to appreciate that I'm here on this earth with them.
I think walking in with sparklers was a little over the top this morning.
I don't want to razz you on your birthday.
I do.
But what was the bold part of the Chris Bryant prediction?
That I'm predicting exactly 32 home runs for him. That's pretty bold.
Okay. I was thinking at least, but he's...
No, exactly. Yeah.
Like, you're going to hit it on the head.
On the head.
On the head.
Okay.
32.
I remember that was quite an argument we got into about Chris Bryant's home runs.
Yeah, I think I was predicting right around 25 and was basically called out for it.
You were? No, Scott was called out for it for predicting 30 home runs.
Right. No, I was called out for being too low on him.
Oh, I don't recall.
He ended up hitting 26. So if you did hit predict 25, you were closer than I was.
To be honest, I was looking at how many he hit when I said I predicted 25.
I think I predicted 26. Anyway, here are your emails. fantasybaseball@cbsi.com. This is from Aaron. It says, Dear Loft Trolls, the beauty of New Girl is that there is no best character. The ensemble cast requires each character to do their part. In that spirit, who's who among the podcastaways? Is Heath the curmudgeonly Nick Miller with a heart of gold awkwardly moonwalking away from every podcast? Is Adam Winston, with your mutual appreciation for bad puns and quirky but respected leadership? Is Chris the suave and hyper-competitive coach who spent time away? And then he doesn't have any suggestions for Nick, for Scott and Al. But neither of you are Schmidt.
I think Heath is coach.
Yeah, I think Heath is coach as well.
I think.
I have no idea what you're talking
about. I think Al is Winston. I think you're Schmidt.
Yeah, I'm totally Schmidt. Are you kidding me? People actually tell me that I remind them of Schmidt.
Okay, then you're Schmidt.
Yeah. So who's Jess and who's and who's Nick?
I don't know. I got to tell you, when Jess was away, you know, in real life, she was having a baby. But on the show, it was jury duty. I did not miss her at all.
Really?
I don't have anything against her. I just don't think she adds nearly as much as the dudes do.
I think she's great. Okay. All right. Well, anyway, here's the question. The Mets say that Yoenis Cespedes will play left and Lagares in center against lefties. This puts Conforto back into a platoon role. Is Conforto undraftable? It's a good question because, yeah, so Cespedes is going to play some center, some left, depending on the handedness of the pitcher. What do you think? Does this really hurt Conforto? And we kind of knew this, too.
It does hurt him. I don't think it makes him undraftable. I also don't trust that the situation will stick for the whole season. The Mets changed their outfield alignment around a lot last year, both before and after getting Cespedes. So, it definitely makes Conforto closer to a late round option in a mixed roto, but far from a draftable.
Okay. So next email is from Carlos in Vancouver, Canada. Yes, we listen to the show up here. Very cool, Carlos. And I've been to Vancouver, so shout out to Vancouver. 12-team head-to-head category league. Currently have J.J. Hoover filling in for Aroldis Chapman. Should I put in a bid for Juan Nicasio? If so, who should I drop? I don't know why he told us about the Hoover-Chapman thing. All right, question is...
Nicasio's relief pitcher available.
Yeah, but it's a categories league. Should I put in a bid for Juan Nicasio? If so, who should I drop? Joe Panic or J.P. Crawford?
Scott's going to disagree vehemently, but I think Panic.
Why would you drop Crawford?
Why not?
Yeah.
Because I think he's a great stash. I think he's going to be the regular shortstop in Philadelphia by about the quarter mark of the season.
Okay.
I'm not nearly as confident he's that close, so I would be fine dropping. I have yet to see him drafted. What? How deep is this league? I think I may have missed the
12 teams. 12 team head-to-head.
I've yet to see him drafted in a 12-team league I've done. So you drop him, nobody's picking him up.
I would drop Crawford for Nicasio.
Yeah.
Those All right, guys.
This is from, ooh, no name. He says, Dear Vinny, Chick, and Bob.
Vinny, Chick, and Bob. I don't know.
12-team Roto League, Keeper League. Will Myers is only eligible at first base in my league. Would you rather have Will Myers or A.J. Reed in a 12-team Roto Keeper League?
I'll go with the kid again. I'll go Reed here for the upside. It's a 12-team league. Myers is, I think, pretty replaceable at first base. Even with Tyler White being on the opening day roster, A.J. Hinch is still talking about Reed being a call-up this year, so I'll go with him.
It would depend probably to me on how, like how exactly the keeper rules work, because that would be the incentive to hold on to Reed over Myers for me if there was a realistic chance Reed would become a long-term keeper for me. If you're just keeping like your best five major leaguers or something, he won't, so... I'm leaning Myers.
This is from Ross in British Columbia, Canada. How do you value pitchers with great upside but that play on bad teams? First time drafting Julio Teheran, he's like fifth. Got a little typo here. So he has Julio Teheran, he has Matt Morey, he has Tyler Glasnow. Morey and Glasnow aren't necessarily going to be on bad teams. But anyway, the broad question, how do you value pitchers with great upside who play on bad teams?
as long as they have great upside, I'm okay with it.
Yeah, I don't penalize them much. I won't say not at all, but I don't penalize them much for being on a bad team. Teron's a good example of that. I'm not afraid to take him in the middle rounds.
Chris Archer's win-loss. Chris Archer was an ace last year, right? We would all agree he was a fantasy ace. Mm-hmm. He went 12-13. So, you know, I mean, Teron's not as good as Archer, but...
It does hurt Archer relative to players of his same skill level.
But we can make too much of win-loss record.
More of a tiebreaker.
Yeah.
We can. I remember those years where, like, Cliff Lee, he had that, like, 5-win season or something, right? That really fluky.
That did kill him. But yeah, that made him totally a nice sleeper the next year.
So then, Ryan asks, 10-team head-to-head points, Dynasty League. I hate missing out on prospects because they aren't, quote, top prospects, end quote. Brandon Drury and Jake Lamb, both are having nice springs for the Diamondbacks. What is their upside this season and long term? Brandon Drury, Jake Lamb. Al!
Well, for Lamb, it's very high because he's going to have the chance right away to play every day. And, he didn't get to show the power last year. He was hurt, for a good chunk of the year. So I think Lamb's upside is to be, somebody you start every week in a 12-team mixed league. Drury, he's going to have a hard time finding playing time in the lineup. So I think his upside is probably more, maybe a deeper mixed league, like a 15-team mixed league. And I'm not super optimistic about him reaching that upside.
And in a keeper scenario, I actually like Drury better long term. Just throwing that out there.
Well, yeah, that's true. I was talking about 2016 upside. If you're talking about longer term, I think they both could be regular contributors in a 12-team mixed league.
The real key for Lamb is going to be he needs to show that power this year.
Yep.
Because he was really pretty bad last year and kind of buoyed by a ridiculously high BABIP.
Absolutely.
And if the power doesn't show up, then he may not have a job all year.
Ryan,
yeah,
from
they have the depth to definitely move him out of there.
Ryan from Seattle, Washington. Dear Dr. Grant, Dr. Sattler, and Dr. Malcolm.
That's Jurassic Park.
It sure is. With Chase Utley set to bat leadoff for the Dodgers to start the season, how much would you bid for Utley in a 10-team, 6x6 NL-only league with a $100 fab budget and weekly acquisitions? How much would you bid for Chase Utley?
$2. Not that interested.
Yeah, me neither.
It's an NL-only league, so if I had just a terrible second base situation, then I might bid $2, but I was thinking zero bid.
Yesterday we were talking about the worst fantasy moves we ever made. Dalton Chambers from Paris, Illinois, tells us about the worst move he made. Last year, Taijuan Walker and Steven Strasburg were on his team. They both got off to horrible starts, so he traded Bryce Harper for Adam Wainwright.
Ouch.
Yes. Ooh.
Yes.
That's bad.
He got 4 shutout innings out of Adam Wainwright, and then Wainwright tore his Achilles.
You know, I thought of an even worse one after yesterday.
Oh, share.
In a long-term keeper league, I had both Dallas Keuchel and Jake Arrieta heading into the 2014 season. So neither of them had shown any reason to believe they were aces yet. 2014 long-term keeper league. Prior to the season, I release Dallas Keuchel. I trade Jake Arrieta along with John Axford for Chris Davis with a K.
Oh,
2 years later. 2 years later, they're the respective Cy Young winners for their leagues.
Ooh,
so.
That is bad. 2 Cy Young award winners.
Yes.
I only got rid of 1.
Yeah.
All right, here's Jeff. 8-team AL-only roto league. 8 teams AL-only roto. 2 catchers, no bench spots. I'm toying with the idea of spending 40-plus on Mike Trout this year, but with his stolen bases likely not returning to what it once was, is Mike Trout worth $40+ in this 8-team AL-only roto league? For reference, last year Trout went for 42, and Cabrera was next at 32.
I think he's worth that, but it's
not enough.
The thing that I've seen, well, I mean,
it's not enough to win him.
He says in his league last year, Trout went for 42, and Cabrera went next at 32. I did not have a ton of experience with auctions before, baseball auctions before coming to CBS, and the thing I've seen so much this year is these numbers and rules are just a guideline. Like, yeah, you go to a league and it turns out these guys are going for $60. And then it sounds like his league, they're going for 42. So in in that league, he's worth being the most expensive player.
Yeah. Okay. Jin in Anaheim did a draft with the 6th overall pick. He picked Carlos Correa instead of Stanton, and now he regrets it. Nerds have mentioned that Correa will outperform all other shortstops by far, but never mentioned the ceiling that he possesses. Does Carlos Correa have the upside of the big three, Trout, Goldschmidt, and Harper?
Well, I'm one of the people who say that, so, but I think it's well established I'm a nerd. I mean, relative to position, yes, I do think he has the same upside as Trout, Goldschmidt, and Harper. So what that would mean, top of mind, would be 35 home runs, 25 steals, and you know, maybe 90 and 90 for RBI and runs, and batting average
if he's
290, 285.
If he's contributing 60 combined home runs and steals, I don't think it's even a relative to position thing.
Right.
So I wonder if his steals are going to be that high long term, but no, I think he has huge upside.
I will a little peek behind the curtain to our predictions article that's coming out. There were two of us that picked Carlos Correa to be the AL MVP.
Hey, I have a question. Does this qualify,
sir,
as a bold prediction? 60 combined homers and steals for George Springer?
Sure. I mean, it could be bolder. It's not quite Desclafani and Valencia level, but it's
70.
Fine.
70 combined.
That's better.
You're getting there.
Book it.
Boulder. Boulder, Colorado.
That's as bold as I'm going. I think we're good. So we got through a lot of emails here. Hopefully we were helpful.
Was it 10?
No, it was 9. Let's do one more.
Okay.
This is Jimbo from a town in eastern Oregon. Dear Anthony, Chris, and Addison, I have listened to you guys for about 5 years now. I enjoy the podcast. I haven't heard one word about Dallas Keuchel and your thoughts on Keuchel this year. If Dallas Keuchel's mom listens to this podcast, I'm sure she's disgusted. I drafted Keuchel as my ace in my recent draft. What are your thoughts on his 2016 projections?
Don't drop him.
Yeah, we just mentioned Keuchel.
Yeah, I think I wrote an article last year calling him the bearded unicorn and making light of his ability to sustain what he'd done the year before. And he was even better. So,
He did not allow a run this spring.
He's awesome.
That will end probably this week.
Mm-hmm.
He's going to kill the Yankees on opening day, I'll tell you that. He destroyed them last year. They can't hit lefties, so. Now, if you were Joe Girardi, would you bench Jacoby Ellsbury for Aaron Hicks on opening day?
No.
Which is what he did in the postseason, except it was Chris Young.
Yeah, I would not either.
No, he did it. He did it in the postseason. He benched Ellsbury for Chris Young.
We're saying we would not.
He did that against a right-hander?
Keuchel. He did it against Keuchel.
Oh. Oh, for Chris.
Right.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah.
I would do it.
Yeah, I think he'll do it.
I think he might. All right, fellas, thank you very much for your time. And tomorrow we got to give our MLB predictions. So if you're not on the show, make sure you email them to me so I can let everybody know. World Series winners, division winners, wild cards, MVP and Cy Young. Why not? And talk deep leagues and whatever else comes to mind. Thanks for listening, everybody. Good luck if you're drafting. And we'll talk to you on Friday.